Hello and welcome to another episode of Season of the Witch with Rowan Oaken, the show where we spill the tea on the occult and read the leaves to filth. I'm your host, Rowan, and before we do anything, happy Halloween, witches, and a merry Samhain to you too. I saw someone calling it Samhain the other day and it made me cringe. It made me cringe for several reasons, because I was thinking, how cute. Like, you know, that moment is so infantilizing. I'm so sorry. You've read that. And obviously, phonetically, it's Samhain. But they were talking about Samhain and giving lots of information to people on a TikTok. And like, you do this at Samhain and you do that at Samhain. And I was like, how sweet. Because they've just read about it and they've not been part of that discursive community to actually look into the pronunciation of it, because I too, when I first was reading about Samhain, called it Samhain until I read a book that phonetically spelled it out, and I was like, the shit, how is that Samhain? But there we go. We started the episode with shade. We didn't even get through an introduction without being shady this week. So what are we talking about in this week's episode? You've probably read the bio, you've seen the title, you know what we're talking about. We are taking a dive, an evolutionary dive, into the exploration of fear. Delving into things like survival mechanisms, epigenetic inheritance, and the physiological responses to fear. We'll also discuss the impact of media on propagating fear, and delving into historical instances of mass hysteria, talking about that word of mass hysteria too, and exploring personal and community practices in the witchy community for dealing with fear. And in addition to that, I will, from a personal interest of mine, I'll be not just touching upon why we enjoy fear, but also discussing some of the unique relationships between the LGBTQIA+ community and the horror genre. And then lastly, I will also be introducing a new segment to our podcast, which is on promoting witchy businesses. So we will have a feature spotlight this week on October Occult Candles. So right, let's jump straight into the episode. I guess I should add, like, why fear? Why fear? Why do I want to talk about fear this week? Of course, I feel there's a really nice connection between fear and Halloween, what we fear, the unknown, the spirit realm, being scared. I think of horror mazes when I think of Halloween. I love to go to a horror maze. I'm not going to talk about some of the really shit ones I've been to this year. Just a big shout out, actually. No, I am. I'm gonna call them out. Thorpe Park in the UK, absolute piece of crap. Stop going. Is this libel? Is this a shady podcast? Stop going, everyone. Really stop going. It's an absolute cash cow. Do go to other places nearby, such as Tully's Farm, who are really pulling out all the stops to give people a fantastic horror experience. Do not give your money to Thorpe Park. I go year on year and I don't know why I do it. I think it's tradition and I'm going to stop. Anyway, let's move on. So I wanted to kind of get to grips with understanding fear as well and how we can kind of release fear, but then why is fear also enjoyable? So I was really interested personally, just, you know, where does fear come from? You know, fear is this survival mechanism. And Randolph Ness writes about this as this evolutionary explanation of our emotions, explaining that fear was there to serve as a protective mechanism for our ancestors. Totally makes sense. You know, like, don't go into the woods, there's a tiger, it'll eat you. Maybe not in the UK. A bear. There was a bear in the woods. We don't have bears anymore. I mean, you know, I guess we killed them all. We ate them. Do you eat bears? You just skin bears, right? Do you eat bears? Question to my listeners, do you eat bears? So, you know, those who reacted really quickly to threats then had a better chance of survival and reproduction, having kids, fucking and having babies. So over time, those advantageous fears, those responses, they became more common in a population. And in fact, we can see that they are becoming bred into our DNA. Bred as in B-R-E-D, not the thing you have with a sandwich. And there have been studies in epigenetic inheritances looking at giving, this is a really awful study, giving electrical shocks to mice associated with certain smells, I think it was. My notes say pains, but that's clearly that's clear typo. So there was these two researchers, Resler and Diaz, who found that the babies of these mice, and they refer to them as pups, but I can't do that. I can't talk about baby mice being pups. It's just wrong. To see how they then gain this fear of smells. So whenever there was a particular smell, they would electrocute the mice, and they would learn to associate that smell with a painful sensation. And what happens here is their babies end up associating the smell with, well, they don't associate it with pain as such, but they do not go near the smell. They are put off by the smell because of a fear that has been bred into them. So I've used this word epigenetic inheritance, and that refers to these changes that organisms. Do you remember at school the fear in your body having to read the word organism out? You're like, don't say orgasm, don't say orgasm, don't say. And as soon as you opened your mouth, the word orgasm came out. You knew it was going to happen. So this epigenetic inheritance is then caused in changes within organisms by this modification of the gene expression, rather than actually the alteration of the genetic code itself, which is a really, really complicated. I am not doing well today. It's a really complicated concept. And I think, to put it simply, what we can imagine is our DNA as like a cookbook. Maybe it's your grimoire, and then each recipe or each page within it is a gene. Now, epigenetics doesn't change the recipe that is in your cookbook or your spell book, but it might put bookmark notes in there, highlight certain recipes, making them easier for you to find, read, or use at a later stage. And those bookmarks can then influence which recipe, in this case, genes in epigenetics, are then used, and how often they are used, or even if they are ignored. And sometimes these bookmarks can be passed down to the next generation. So parts of the recipes, parts of the spells might get passed down, but the bookmarks might also as well. And they might affect how the next person uses their cookbook, their grimoire, because of what bookmarks are in there and what notes are in there. So the genetic code may be different, and there may be new pages within the cookbook, but the bookmarks might be the same, dictating the way that they use it. So hopefully that helps to kind of understand what this kind of epigenetic inheritance or epigenetic markers might be, which is really, really interesting when we think about behaviors and inherited behaviors. And, you know, this really got me thinking about my own personal fears, things that I'm scared of. So I'm deathly terrified of open water. I think there's a term for, is it like thalassophobia? I might have really butchered that word. I'm pretty sure it starts with a TH or a T, and it's got some S's in there. So I am terrified of dark, deep, open water. It's a credibly rational fear. Water's dangerous. It can drown you. Things that go to the bottom of the ocean can grow as big as they freaking want to be. It's disgusting. But it's so deep-seated with me, to the point that just looking at dark water, it scares the shit out of me. It's like, where does that come from? I grew up by the sea. I grew up in Southport, and if you know anything about Southport Beach, is you get to see the water twice a year. Like, it rarely ever comes in. So it can't be that. I did grow up near ditches. I just don't feel like it could be that. My family, on my mum's side, they come from kind of the Scottish border. Could it be about the lochs in there, the fear of those big open bodies of water, the deep water where the spirits live, the water spirits dragging you down, Ginny Greenteeth? You know, the reason why I find this so fascinating is that it begins to question, what is it that we are carrying with us? Our fears, anxieties, and traumas that actually aren't ours. They're our ancestors. And I guess more importantly, how do we then begin to shed these epigenetic fears and these cycles? And I guess it's worth thinking about, I think it's worth thinking about the usefulness of it before we shed it. So two researchers, Oman and Monika, write about fear as some form of preparedness, like a fear of snakes, or I guess in my case, water. They prepare us to be scared of something that is indeed dangerous. It could kill us. They safeguard us. And this is embedded into our automatic nervous system to get us to respond to threats, to flee or to fight. It sets off a very chemical reaction in the brain from the amygdala, which is central to this response, which then releases hormones such as adrenaline and cortisol. That's the stress hormone. And some people are very reactive to these sorts of responses too. And you know, I think of all the trauma and attachment training that I've completed by being an adoptive parent, not an adopted parent, and just learning about how the amygdala is perceived as operating differently for children who have experienced trauma. They're more likely to be constantly in this fight or flight. And when you think of that from an ancestry perspective, if you always had parents who were skittish and flying off the handle, you too then become this way and you inflict this on your children too. That's what they, that's a belief. And that is something that I've worked incredibly hard with to reparent. I'm really talking quite emotionally authentically here, is when my son does get very aggressive, my bookmarks in my epigenetics remind me that my parents would get very verbally aggressive. It sends me back into a very childhood feeling when my son is being physically or emotionally aggressive. I feel like the child. I don't feel like the parent. That's the response it has in me. And I've had to work incredibly hard to tear some of those bookmarks out and go, I don't need that one anymore. That's not serving me. That's not helpful in this situation. This is different now. But I do know from my parents that that's how they were parented. And I don't think they spent the time looking at those bookmarks and those notes that were made in their recipe book and tearing those apart. They lived in the same kind of childhood fear that they had as children themselves, of continuing that cycle of trauma. You know, I have found it really fascinating just to study what childhood trauma does to the brain in terms of, and I should have given trigger warnings at the start of this. You're listening to Season of the Witch. You were just, it's a trigger podcast. I don't know how I feel about the word triggered anymore. It's overused. It's overused by Gen Z. I think it's okay to be triggered, but let's stop using it now. I'm kind of done with it. I think as a person, we are going to be triggered. We're going to find things triggering. But just cool it down. Allow yourself to be triggered. Study that. Learn from it. Stop going on about it. Here I am on a podcast talking about things that trigger me. But I think just fucking learn from it. Get over yourselves. What was I talking about? Childhood trauma. Trigger warning. And what it does to the prefrontal cortex to impact decision-making and impulse control, the bit that tells us whether something is a perceived threat or not. You know, that's particularly interesting for adopted children, especially those that have been raised in hostile environments. That can impact things like decision-making and impulse control. The brain is just constantly in fight or flight. I find that bloody fascinating. So what gets even more interesting, though, as well, is when is that perceived threat thing. You know, the feeling when you walk into a room and you feel like the heebie-jeebies, something's wrong. Before we move on, can we just talk about the willies? Why is that a thing? Why my North American friends, I think it kind of sometimes get used over here. I just can't cope with it when someone's like, "Oh, they gave me the willies." Like, a willy is 100% a penis here, and I'm just not here for it. Like, don't say it gives you the willies. I do suppose we call cats pussies, so perhaps we should just kind of call it on quits. Call it on quits, call it quits, call it quits on that one. You can have willies, we'll have pussies, it's fine. We're all weird. Language is stupid. So, what we're talking about here is this idea of false positives. You know, when you like you mistake a stick for a snake. It's better to shit yourself at the stick than to think the snake is a stick and then get bit by the snake. This creates this sort of unnecessary fear and caution around non-threatening situations. And it's perhaps heightened more so for people who've had ancestors living in situations which have been incredibly hostile, that have then passed down this embedded false positive out of necessary caution. Go back to the mice who were electrocuted, for example. The bit that I don't get, and I guess I don't have to because it's not that kind of podcast, is this idea of neuroplasticity, this the brain's ability to change, and how if you have repeated exposure to an event, it can then embed this idea that this is a fear into your brain. But equally, you could have repeated exposure to something and then it becomes less scary. As in, like exposure therapy. How does that even work? I guess it's all part of like this framing and reframing, thinking of the way that you can take control over a fear as opposed to a fear taking control over you. So the example I've talked about, my son having particular outbursts and how that can be triggering to my childhood, but like the repeated exposure of that and actually sitting in that experience when he's having a meltdown and really trying to reframe it. That is part of that neuroplasticity. It's about relearning, actually. Maybe I do understand it. I've taught myself through something. That is not based on any actual scientific backing. Get a therapist. I don't know. Of course, it would be really hard to talk about fear without thinking about things like the media. The media are so bloody fabulous for just capitalizing on fear. In fact, I think the media, it's run by fear. Fear of war, crime, the other, like people, the other, technology, scarcity, you name it. It's all just bloody fear. And those over time amplify and shape what it is we are to fear. All you have to do is look at what happens when the news says, like, there might be a shortage of something. Suddenly, it's been completely bought off the shelves. And this vicarious learning shapes the way we collectively see fear and moves me on to talk about the idea of mass hysteria. And I said earlier, I've got a problem with the word mass hysteria. It was a word that was reserved for women. The word actually comes from the word uterus, I think Greek, maybe. It sounds like it could be a Greek word. And in the 19th century, it was a diagnosable illness for women. What you should do, what you must do, is go and read The Yellow Wallpaper short story, fabulous short story by Charlotte Perkins Gilman. Just perfectly sums up what I'm talking about here in terms of hysteria, fear, hysteria, gaslighting. Bit of a sidetrack, but do. Go read it. We're talking about hysteria, mass hysteria. The first one that comes to mind when I think of that, of course, is the Salem witch trials, which. Sorry. I'm just rereading that back in my notes, where I'm just like, Salem witch trials, and it's auto-corrected in my notes to the Salami witch trials. The Salami witch trials. What would that even be? What would the Salami witch trials be? Long before Salem, there was Sandwichville, where the notorious sandwich dunks happened to see if someone's sandwich would sink or float. Everyone was on the lookout for deli meats. Oh my God. Before cheese witches, there were meat witches. That was a really dumb side tangent, and I'm really sorry for that. I think there was about 7 side tangents in that one. And probably my favorite mass hysteria is it's not the Salem witch trials. We've covered that on this podcast. Let's move on. Is the dancing plague of 1518 in France. A real thing, a total real thing. And a woman named Frau Trofea began dancing in the street, and within a week, dozens joined her. And by the end of the month, around 400 people were dancing. Many of them danced until they collapsed. And not just collapsed from exhaustion, but some of them died. Actually died from dancing. And the exact cause of this, it still remains unknown. You know, there are theories that it was, and I never, do you know what, this is one that I feel like I've not seen a pronunciation of, whether it's ergo or ergot, poisoning, which it comes from, does it come from wheat? It comes from a grain. Let's say it comes from a grain, a type of maize. And this then sends people into this crazy fever of seeing things. And this has come up a few times, actually, that they even blamed the Salem witch trials for this. But this, you know, as I said, it's a real, real thing. It happened. There was some controversy over whether anyone actually died, because those accounts do just come from one guy's journal article that he's written, as in journal account, not article. So maybe people didn't die. People were just off their tits on some wheat poison. A more modern day one that comes to mind. Let's bring 1518. Let's bring it to the 20th, 21st century. The first one is Satanic Panic. You know, brought on by things like Charles Manson and weirdly Dungeons of Dragons, plural. Nice. A more modern one, the Y2K Panic. Do you remember that? Like, the clocks are going to change, and all of a sudden the internet's going to explode and our computers will just die and planes will fall from the sky. Clown sightings. Do you remember those clown sightings in 2016 of just people randomly seeing clowns? What the fuck was that all about? I do. You know, people do love a collective panic. They do. And I think there is something in all this about the cultural transmission of fear. It brings a sense of community to people, a collective trauma. Now, before we move on any further with talking about traumas, being triggered, fears, I do have something very exciting to announce. I do. And that is our new segment in our show, where I will be offering a little portion of our show to shout out a witchy business out there. It's completely free to be involved. So do, if you are a witchy business out there, you're listening to this and you're going, what the crap is happening? What is this? This is new. I'm offering a free little segment for me to give a shout out on some of the witchy businesses, which I absolutely think are bloody fantastic, that I love. I don't know what my selection criteria is, other than being quite subjective. Do I like it? Do I think it's nice? Would I buy it? Have I bought it? The first question that got asked was, why the frig are you doing this? You don't get paid for this podcast. And I have thought about monetizing aspects of this, because it's, you know, it takes a lot of time. Why would you do this if you get nothing from it? And for me, yeah, it's a giving back. It gives no skin off my nose to shout out a freaking fabulous business, and it helps people out. It's cost of living crisis. Things are difficult. Life is hard. Here's some free stuff. Yay. So I will be shouting out October Occult Candles, who are one of the first businesses that I actually ended up following as a podcast when I was first on Instagram. Really, really obsessed by their candles. Some really, really freaking cool ones. There's a Midnight Society one. How cool is that? What's the phrase that they say at the start of it? I submit this for the approval of the Midnight Society. And we've had Midnight Society episodes on here as well. And we're talking, are you afraid of the dark? And I'm hoping that's what the reference is anyway, because that's what I assume it to be. One of my favorite horrors there, The Ring. How cool. So there's lots that are themed just on horror films. So Hayley May, who is the owner of October Occult Candles, reached out to me and said, I'd love to be featured on the podcast. And I was like, oh, I'd love for you to be featured on the podcast. Love your candles. So I did put a little reach out over on Instagram and just said, if anyone wants to be featured, do send me a message over on Instagram at SOTW with Rowan, or send me an email at, what's my email address? seasonofthewitchpodcast@gmail.com. And just let me know about your business. I'll have a little look into that. Can't promise that I'm going to respond to everyone. So let's get back to Hayley and a fabulous October occult candle business. So Hayley says that they are a fall obsessed handcrafting witch. And I had to look over that fall obsessed. Does she like watching people fall over? Like, that's what my stupid brain went to. As in autumn obsessed handcrafting witch. And they totally are. Hayley loves crafting spooky scents with natural oils, flowers, spices, woods, and other earthly materials that she hopes will make to conjure a memory or just to invoke a little bit of magic into your life. Hayley also creates custom horror movie candles, which we know, for your fave horror flick. Candle magic is Hayley's favourite form of divination. You can find Hayley on Instagram or Insta at October Occult, or you can follow their witchy Instagram account at Witch of the Wild Flowers. So I do encourage you to go check out their candles and get yourself a little custom candle too. How exciting. How bloody exciting. So that's our little witchy shout out for October Occult candles this week. Right, back to thinking about things that terrify the shit out of us. Now, talking of the witchy community, fear seems to be quite predominantly tied to the concept of banishing something. When you look up things about fears, the removal of something that's oppressive with sage or similar cleansing herbs such as rosemary that are used for energetic releasing. But we also see more new age approaches coming in with things like positive affirmations and of course shadow work, which I don't know how I feel about, really, about the word. I don't know how to talk about this. You know, shadow work, I feel like it annoys me. I feel like I'm a bit over it. I don't know why I'm so over it. There's just something that, there's like something I'm attributing it to. I think it's one of those words where it's been overused by, you know, white women with balayage hair in yoga pants, and it's just sort of turned me off. You know, doing a little bit of shadow work today. I'm just doing some shadow work. This is my morning routine, and I'm like, fuck off, fuck off. You know, they're talking about like when I was like, you know, 12, my mom got me the Malibu Barbie, and I didn't want the Malibu Barbie, and it really made me upset. Like, I'm just not interested. I'm not interested. Move on with your life. So for me personally, when I'm experiencing fear, and fear, as we've explored, can come in so many different forms, I like to be outside. I like to feel grounded and connected. That can often work if I'm just looking to rid myself of something temporary, a momentary cortisol flood. Go see some green, ground your dirty ass feet and breathe. Do yourself some box breathing. Bring your heart rate down. And I think all of us listening to the podcast here, they know that sort of shit. I don't need to tell you stuff like that. You know, about like calming your nerves. And I guess I'm talking more about the huge fears that we have. The ones that are irrational. Embedded into our psyche, passed down to us, whether we like them or not. And the one I do, and it's super bloody simple. You get yourself something to write on. You know where this is going. You know where this is going. You write your fear on the piece of paper. It's always very simple for me. Write what you want to be released, or often in my case is binding something as well. You know, I want to bind X or release X. And now I have a habit of going to the binding route as opposed to the releasing route. And I should add the thing that I'm going to mention here at this stage is not as beginner witchy stuff and may make some of you shit your pants, but I think we can make alterations on this one. When I have done this before, I've used blood. Ooh. I've got these disposable finger prick things. So I was part of a post-COVID research trial to test my blood at home, and they've become really handy for things like blood magics. They sent me like 20 of them by accident. I don't think I was supposed to use 20. So at this point, I put my blood on the paper, and it's a part of me, this chemical genetic makeup that I'm looking to change or bind. You know, we've been talking about epigenetics. It's part of me, part of my blood. And from this, I then start binding the piece of paper up with string or something similar. It's got to be flammable though. And I then burn it in a flame-proof pot, and imagine the rope being kind of tampered with the blood, sealing and locking in this thing I've been looking to banish. Now, I know that I mentioned blood. It's very scary to some people, and I get that. I totally get that. But I think you could use other stuff. Saliva? I don't know. Other bodily fluids. Or you could just use nothing. Maybe you don't have to. You don't have to. It's your freaking spell. But for me, knowing that there is something of the body, of my body, going in there is incredibly important for me. I have also in the past done a bit of evocation. Remember, we're not invoking, we're evoking. This is coming from you. Although that said, maybe you are invoking your ancestors to help break a particular cycle. In my case, I'm evoking. I'm pulling something out of myself. And I'm going to be real, real honest with you. I hate written spells, especially ones that rhyme. I can't help but think they sound a little bit like Sabrina the Teenage Witch. You know, I find myself either sort of Frankensteining someone else's work or just stating exactly what I want to happen and why I want to happen in, why I want it to happen in this way. It's like really super simple. I get that the musicality of a spell is great for the oral tradition of passing something down, and that there is power and intent to speaking rhythmically in this way, but I feel like a tit. I really, really do. I don't know how to not feel like a tit. I'll sweep a broom in my garden and invoke the spirits, but as soon as I'm hubbling and bubbling, I just feel like a knob. I really, really do. What would I say in place of this then? You know, I might, I'll write my fear X on the paper, and I might say that here's my fear. I bring it out from my body with my blood, and what I'm going to do, now I'll be saying this, what I'm doing is I'm going to bind this with the rope, and I'll say it exactly like this. I'm going to bind this tight 9 times, and I'm going to, this is sealed from harming me. And what I want to do is I'm going to confirm my intention by the fire. And I want to release the fear to the air. The ashes are going to go to the earth and my worries to the water. Just as simple as that. And it would sound like that. I know some people probably want it to sound more ritualistic, but for me, it's a conversation I'm in dialogue with. Some people might find that incredibly disrespectful, that it's not spoken with reverence. But I think religion has made you believe that. Get over it. I want to talk next about why we like being scared. I was talking to my husband about this episode, because I hadn't recorded it when I was in Thorpe Park. And there's a whole section on a ride which used to be called Derren Brown's Ghost Train. If you don't know Derren Brown, he is a hypnotist, would you call him, in the UK. Fantastic. I used to have when Derren Brown was young, I used to have a crush on Derren Brown. Is that really embarrassing? It's not embarrassing. I think he was handsome when he was younger. Derren Brown, if you were listening to this right now, which I'm sure you're not, I'm sure you're still handsome now. Why did I admit that? I should edit that out. And at the start of his ride, he talks about fear. You know, why do we like to scare children? And that's what my husband was like. Like, are you just going to be repeating what Derren Brown says? I'm like, no, maybe I am. Maybe he's just jealous of my love affair with Derren Brown now. So why do we like being scared? There's a sense of controlled fear, you know, it coming from a place knowing that the fear is controlled by you, that you're safe, and that when you get into that scared control setting, such as watching a horror movie or going through horror mazes, you know the fear is temporary and that you're not actually in any real danger. So it creates a sense of enjoyment. But it also creates a biochemical reaction. So a rush of adrenaline, the release of endorphins and dopamine, which can then create a state of arousal that is quite similar to excitement. That can result in this pleasurable, opioid-like sense of euphoria, this enjoyment. We also might get this sensation of overcoming a fear or facing a scary situation, and that gives that sense of reward as well. Some people as well might be wired differently, might actually be more susceptible to enjoying something that is scary or thrilling. The release of dopamine, a neurotransmitter associated with reward and pleasure, I've mentioned that twice now, during this scary situation can then act as a reward. And some people, I think myself included, get a bit of a kick from this release compared to others. I am someone who freaking loves something jumping out of me and the thrill and excitement of the fear of the unknown, the mysterious. It's a real dopamine hit for me. So I can kind of see it as that. Now, when I was putting this together, and this was a bit of a last minute afterthought, I was also making some connections and thinking about why the gay community love horror so much. Now, I know a lot of my listeners are straight females. I know that because Spotify tells me. Worrying that it knows that. All this data that it has about us. But I'm going to talk some gay shit for a minute. And you can skip past this if you're not interested in gay shit. That's fine. My gay listeners, come listen to me. My bi listeners, my LGBTQIA+ listeners, settle in. So the horror genre has been very deeply rooted historically with queer storytelling and creators of queerness and horror. You know, many vintage horror stories do have this subtext that reflects gender and sexuality norms of their particular time in one way that resonates with individuals who find themselves outside of that normative sect of society. So think of things like Frankenstein, Dracula, the picture of Dorian Gray. All of those have been noted for their queer subtext, the idea of the other. And the horror genre has continued to provide a space for queer creators to explore and express identities, queer identities, through storytelling. If you need proof of this, look at The Babadook. I still don't know why The Babadook is a queer LGBTQIA+ icon. How and when did this happen? But I love it. I love it. horror is this vehicle for emotional exploration, a political commentary, and the analysis of human mortality and the unknown. Horror is a genre I feel that we've seen queer people openly within before many other genres. One of the ones that really comes to mind, and I suppose it was still very queer coded. Friday the 13th. Nightmare on Elm Street. Jesse, the gayest character in the history of horror, I feel. Very queer coded. The whole thing was really about coming out. What horror does is creates this funhouse mirror. It reflects this cultural anxiety, this preoccupation concerning what it means to be perceived as different or a monster. And that reflection then resonates with the experiences of certain marginalized groups, including the LGBTQIA+ communities. I'm someone doing a horror prediction of what will be the next thing coming up. You know, we've had zombie films of predominantly been in the media for a significant period of time, and that reflected what was going on culturally at the time. Then we had things around multiverses, both being in horror and other genres, and predominantly the other genres. You know, what will be next as we move towards this realm of generative AI, and how is that going to affect the way that we interact with the horrors of today's society? It does. It is a mirror to our society, and I think for those that are othered and set outside of it, there's something that can then be resonated within that. There's a documentary as well titled Queer for Fear, which explores this evolution of horror through a queer lens and how the queer community have constructed communities around horror. One that kind of comes to my mind, it's not horror as such, the Rocky Horror Picture Show. It creates this platform to challenge traditional notions of gender and sexuality, a place to embrace sexual freedom and the objectification of men for a gay gaze. Yeah, we're talking about Tim Curry in leggings right now. The gay gaze. The gay gaze. Isn't that a funny phrase to say? Do you know what? That was one of those films I remember watching probably far too young, and I remember being recognized and seen within it, associating myself with essentially the monsters of the show. And just that song, Don't Dream It, Be It, being something that continued with me through my teenage years to say, be who you want to be as authentically as you can. I hate the word. What is wrong with me today? I'm so sorry. Being authentically you, I've now come to hate that phrase as well. I feel like that has been it's been taken by the wrong communities. Like, again, it's the yoga pants. Leave us alone. I do like yoga pants look comfy though. I'm everyone who wears yoga pants and does yoga, I'm not coming for you. It's my way of saying kind of like a basic bitch, but a different kind of basic bitch. It's like a basic spiritual bitch. like this idea of like being authentically you, I feel it's been overused. Again, it's another phrase that I feel has been overused, and it's been overused to explain people who just kind of want to be mouthy. And I'm like, stop it. Just go be a Karen somewhere else. Go be a modern Karen somewhere else. We're not interested. So we've talked about LGBTQIA plus fear and horror and how it's really embedded into this community of being othered, and perhaps why we resonate to it so much. And it is something that I have resonated with for such a long time. You know, even thinking about the representations in horror characters and narratives, the idea of a final girl in horror films, the typical last character left alive, symbolizing this idea of resilience and defiance against oppressive forces. It's always really resonated with me. That's another reason why I freaking love horror. And there we have it. This week we've explored spine-tillingly. Well, that's not a word. Spine-tingling intricacies of fear. We've traced some of its roots back to our flighty ancestors, to some of the modern creepy crawly fears that then tickle our amygdalas today. We took a terrifying trip through mass hysteria's historical hoedowns. Do look that up, by the way. It's a real event. We've dipped our toes into the murky waters of personal and collective fears within the witchy community, and finally touched on why it is the gays love a spook so much. So do get in touch if you just want to have a shout out, say hello. If you're a witchy business, contact me at SOTW with Rowan on Instagram or seasonofthewitch@gmail.com. If you have a problem you want posing, our next episode is going to be the Cauldron of Candor. A bit of cock for you. You can contact me over at SOTW with Rowan again on Instagram or seasonofthewitchpodcast@gmail.com. Let me know your problem and we may be featuring it. It's just me. I may be featuring it on the show. And I guess I've not done this in a while, I guess because it's a little bit cringe, but if you are looking to support the podcast in any way, share it on socials, give us a review, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. I don't know if you can do it on Spotify. I don't think you can. It takes a minute or two to tell us what you tell us. Why am I a plural today? What is wrong with me? I'm trying to be a brand. That's what it is, isn't it? How cringe is that? Oh, Season of the Witch. tell me what you think of the podcast. Hopefully good things. Hopefully great things. And thank you. Thank you as always, witches. You have been listening to Season of the Witch with Rowan Oaken. I have been your host, Rowan. Now don't forget to stay sassy, classy, witchy, and bitchy. And now go carve yourself a sexy ass pumpkin. Have some soup. Have candy corn. We don't have candy corn in the UK. Is candy corn hard? Is it hard? It looks like it's a hard thing. What is candy corn? Anyway, goodbye!